It is Sunday, March 30th, and you are listening to the Outsiders Comic Cast. Hey guys, I'm Weevil before Sally, and here with
Mark Gibson,
Mark Otley,
Khalil Goodman.
Back with another podcast. It's been a couple of weeks. It's a beautiful Sunday evening. What have you guys been up to? Reading a lot of comics?
I wish. That's the one thing I've not been doing enough of.
Yeah.
Gotta get caught up in my comics.
Same here.
Work. This adult stuff is hard.
It is. I remember my old days when I used to read just all comics all day.
Yep.
And that's probably why I have to work so hard now. I didn't study enough at school.
And I've been kind of getting caught up in the hype for Winter Soldier.
Oh, yes.
That I saw an article for a guy who like would have seen like a preview version of it in the States, and he is saying that it's great. It is.
I've seen reviews saying the best Marvel movie to date.
Actually, he was saying it's the best Marvel movie since Iron Man.
Wow. Glad to hear that, because Captain is my favorite character. My favorite Avenger.
And not only that, the style they're doing him in here is perfect.
Like Baker, you know?
Yeah, very political thriller. I mean, you get parts of the comic by Brubaker, Winter Soldier, but they've made it like mature without being grim throughout.
Good.
People have been talking about the relationship between Steve and Falcon, Sam Wilson. How that's like great. It's like a fantastic like, buddy relationship. People be singing the praises of Scarlett Johansson and her turn as Black Widow. I've just been hearing all sorts of great things about it.
Yeah, same here. Everything I've read has been glowing.
I haven't read anything because I want to be not spoiled when I go in.
I've pretty much done the same thing.
But looking at the trailer,
you mean the 10-minute trailer?
No. I'm the first release
trailer. I
saw that.
I said, this is going to be great. I don't need to say anything else.
Exactly. But I watched 10 minutes of the film.
It's a preview.
I watched that 10 minutes.
I also watched that 10 minutes.
And it was
would you do
fantastic.
That?
I loved it.
I don't want to do that.
Because with Marvel movies, it's not really the story. That's just the intro, fun, hook, connect, and then go from there. There was nothing about Bucky in the intro. It was just a good, fun...
When I want to see everything fresh.
I don't blame you, but I wanted to see how they were doing it. I was really concerned about it. Yeah.
When Captain America came out, people liked it, but for me, it's one of the best Marvel films.
I agree.
That came out. It was not as good as Iron Man 1, but it was quite good, I thought. And I don't even like Captain America.
Seeing
the trailer for Winter Soldier, I was like, yep, this is going to be great, and I'm going to see anything else. So I've been avoiding it. Even that article you posted in the comic book... Outsiders comic book underground forum, I avoided it. I was just like, good, great, people like it.
Yeah.
But
speaking of reading comics, somebody shot Bruce Banner in this week's issue of Incredible Hulk.
Spoilers!
The induction. Yeah, the Indestructible Hulk.
Indestructible Hulk, yeah. I mean, alright, yeah, okay, fine. Spoilers, sure. I mean, the rest of the issue was just dealing with like a wrapping up on the previous storyline with the Terra Genesis mom and that kind of stuff. But the last page, because I'm not going to tell you how it happened, because there's a bit that ties into that story that led to that. But I was like, oh, whoa, you know.
Marvin is still on that.
I can't remember who's on it, honestly, but
I think it's
that just stood out in my mind for this week. I was like, whoa.
We get that later.
Two shots back of the head. Well,
it's just Marvel preparing you for other shots because did you guys see the preview for Original Sin?
Original Sin?
Number Zero.
I have not been checking out any news really or anything.
That's the storyline with the Watcher Gang shot.
Oh, right.
And they're going to investigate it. Yeah. I have a big, deep raised eyebrow for that because that sounds really kind of stupid.
I have a big deep raised eyebrow for everything that comes out nowadays. Everything's a big event.
I'm actually on the same side literally as made for this one. It's not event.
Alec Gibson says once it's over it's back to status quo. No one ever changes. So
this week we have some call in from some fans and I think they reference things about crossovers.
Okay.
So we should probably get into that. But first, some news.
Comic book news.
Jumping straight into the news this week, we've got a three interesting things happening. First up, I don't know if you call him fan favorite, but writer Peter David is teaming up with Fearless Defenders artist for an all-new Spider-Man 2099. I'm not sure if it's going to actually be titled All-New Spider-Man 2099, but Peter David is back to pen an all-new story, all-new series featuring Miguel O'Hara, the Spider-Man of 2099. This time, the scribe is teaming up with Fearless Defenders artist Will Sleeney. If you've been following Superior Spider-Man, you will know that O'Hara is currently a man of the time, and that's one of the themes the series will be dealing with. And this new series debuts later this July.
Yay.
I like Peter David.
I'm currently enjoying his all new X-Factor very much.
Yeah. I saw somebody having all this, there's also excitement and people clamoring for Miguel. I was just a bit confused, like, did I miss something? I mean, it's 2099 was okay, but
what if it was bringing back a 2099 title, it'd be Doom 2099.
Yeah, I didn't even read that. I just read Spider-Man and looked like, what's the big deal? I'll try it, but
yeah,
I'm not like really excited.
Side titles.
Yeah, today is obviously the day to agree with Wade. I remember liking it. I don't remember thinking it was that. I don't remember Miguel being, as maybe it's just as you get older. I feel more excited about Miles Morales than I do about Miguel.
Yeah.
I don't remember Miguel being compelling enough for me to want to
follow him. I remember thinking distinctly, who the hell is this smuck?
But the excitement on our forum seems to indicate that he has some fans.
Yeah, if you check out the forums on Lane, people are crazy about it too. So
it might just be us in this
room.
Yeah,
maybe.
Well, consensus. Alright, continuing for our news, more detail on IDW's Super Secret Crisis War.
Yeah,
I guess it's probably only.
Notice the sigh at the start of us.
I want to see that. I can read this.
Okay, alright. Expect 5 tie-in one shots that feature 2 backup stories each from the team of writer Louis
Simonson.
And artist Derek Charm.
Who I don't know.
The IDW Cartoon Network crossover event titled Super Secret Crisis War brings together characters from Samurai Jack, Ben 10, Powerpuff Girls, and Dexter's Lab.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, so now you've put a different context on it. That means the title is sarcastic.
Yes.
That's awesome.
To defeat their greatest enemies led by Samurai Jack's Aku. Supporting the main series are 5 one-shots, which will feature characters not yet seen in IDW comics, including Johnny Bravo by Eric Burnham, with art by Erica Henderson. Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy by Kate Lee, with art by Troy Little. Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends by Ivan Cohen. Cow and Chicken by Jim Zub, with art by George Monolungo. And Codename Kids Next Door by Scott Peterson, with art by Ryan Jampol.
That was so good.
That all sounds fantastic. I loved all of those TV
shows. Not all, but
no, not all three, but some of them were big stars.
Grimm, Foster's Home, Codename Kids Next Door.
No, you said Foster. It's not Foster anywhere. Foster's Baby Got Robbed. What the hell? That's my favorite Kate place.
What?
Yeah.
The Robin Badgeries?
Yes.
Things Brown.
This has nothing to do with comics at all, but that's the only place I buy my birthday cakes from, and they rob Foster's Baby. If that place shuts down, I don't know what to do.
Should I get money or bread?
Yeah. Jeez. Back to
Pick up a tangent.
Yeah.
That was a really crazy tangent.
Yeah, you said Foster, so.
Weird association game.
That was obviously a segue into something else.
I don't know. The only character I'm really familiar with from these one shots is Johnny Bravo, honestly.
You never watched any of those Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Lab,
Samurai Jack.
I know Samurai Jack. I know
Ben 10.
People that consider like classic Cartoon Network would be Johnny Bravo, Samurai Jack, Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Lab.
You never saw Codename Kids Next Door?
Codename Kids Next Door.
I love Codename Kids Next Door.
Number 1 and number 2 and number 3.
I don't know. But
I don't know how
Cartoon Chicken gets
into it.
I don't see how Cartoon Chicken gets into the rest of it, but I think it's great. I'm so excited.
Yeah. They should really have encouraged Curly Dog. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Well, that's not classic. If you're going to put there,
that's
in the same era as Grimm.
That's like all new.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa. That'd be Marvel No or something. the second wave.
Alright, wrapping up our news cap this week. There's a time spamming murder mystery coming to Vertigo. an 8-issue series titled Bodies is coming to DC Entertainment's Mature imprint Vertigo in July.
Oh boy.
Written by Cy Spencer of Hellblazer, City of Demons, and The Violent Underground fame, each issue of the comic is divided into 6-page chapters.
Oh boy.
Each drawn by one of 4 artists.
Oh boy.
Dean Ormson, Phil Winslade, Megan Hentrick, and Tula Lotte. Set in London, the series follows a century-spanning murder mystery set in 1890, 1940, 2014, and 2050. The tale will also follow 4 detectives, assumingly one each era. Yeah.
Was it 4 detectives?
Oh. No mention on the details of the characters, the 4 detectives.
Is this me that stuff like this turns off and makes me not want to even look at it? Or I know it's a gimmick to drawing people, but when I see something that's like too much work, I don't have the energy.
This one, the initial thing, it was kind of just, you know, Mark was going, mom, 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 mom. When he started getting towards the end.
Can you do that again?
No, no, I can't, of course not. But towards the end, when you had the 4 times, multiple detectives trying to gather a single plot under Vertigo, who hopefully will treat your intelligence with some respect, I might be game enough to try it.
Yeah, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. You let me know.
I can't remember the last match you read a Vertigo title. So.
What? I don't want to jump ahead to my recommendation for this week, but I'm going to mention that.
You're not reading Royals Masters at War.
I'm reading Dead Boy Detectives.
Dead Boy Detectives, yeah.
I'm really enjoying
it. Oh, that's good stuff, yeah.
Based in Sandman.
Yeah. It's a spin-off.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, that's it for our news cap this week.
Outsiders Comic Book Discussion.
New segment. We're going to get some...
Oh, reader questions.
Yes.
Listener questions.
Fans, listeners have called in. So we've got 2 listeners who have sent us. And we're going to get more of these as we go on. But... we've got 1 from Barbados and 1 from St. Vincent. So
we're international!
Woo! I'm going to...
No, that's more regional.
I'm going to play the first one, along with the 2. This one is from Jason Brown from St. Vincent, and he has some questions for us about Marvel Now.
Greetings from St. Vincent. This is Jason, tuning into the Outsiders podcast, as usual. Thanks, you guys, for inviting us over to, you know, ask some questions and stuff. And first, I want to talk about the new Marvel Now books. I've been enjoying them so far. I think, the all new Marvel Now has been really distinct in the looks, especially in the colors. I think there's this big transition back to flat colors as opposed to the glossy colors. Though there are some books like Guardians of the Galaxy that keep the glossy colors, stuff like She-Hulk. And Moon Knight, you know, they look more towards the flats, and it's a different sort of distinction on the page. It's a different sort of vibrancy and life to the colors, and it makes the books really stand out. You know, and it's all about the creative team now, so, you know, it's less of a house style that, say, DC has implemented since the New 52, and... you really don't... there's really not that much going in terms of continuity. It's just different books, different visions, and everybody trying to be fun, I guess. So that said, I've been enjoying Miss Marvel. Ghost Rider's been really strong. Moon Knight. You know, there's the mainstays like Thor and Guardians of the Galaxy and other books. But I like the all-new books, and I like the direction they're going in. Question for you guys... You know, what's the strongest team you think, you know, in these books so far? I'd be, you know, willing to hazard some guesses as to what some of you guys would say. But, I'd be interested to hear you speak on that. Other than that, anybody reading Sandman? I think Sandman Overture is a really good book. Really solid team again. Just taking forever to come out, as you would expect with those 2 creators on it, right? But I don't think I've heard any reviews. I don't think I've heard any reviews from you guys, at least. So I'd be interested to hear what you think of the Sandman books. Thanks again for allowing me the opportunity to bring some questions, and, you know, all the best to you guys.
All right.
So first, kind of two questions there.
First of all, let's not wait to spend Jason Sonley anyway, but I guess I should, but, you know.
It's Vince Edge.
Yeah, I can't appreciate what Vince is not saying. I don't know. You know, yes, just reading words. As for the Sandman, yes, I am been locked and I've not read Sandman at all, even the first one. So yes, I can't even ask that. Ollie's shaking his head.
We've talked about Ultra. I don't think we reviewed it, but I at least mentioned it. The first issue, and it was going well and it was strong, but it's a little early to say this is going to be epic. I haven't gotten the second issue yet. I understand it's out finally, so I'm looking forward to taking a look. But yeah, I mean, it's
game. Can I start with that, or should I start from?
I really think you should start with the early stuff. All
right, cool.
If this story goes in a certain direction and they change that recommendation, I'll let you know.
Okay.
We haven't been reading Sandman. Well, when I wants to say, I remember butting up against Sandman way back, and it's a little too old there, mating.
Right, that was me as a kid. It's too
pretty
much
out there.
I think I probably handled it now, but back then.
Yeah, I was in my early 20s, so that was targeted at me.
Okay. I mean, it's very literary in ways. It's also very much utilizes comic book tropes that you can't get in other forms.
It utilizes them consciously, which is very cool.
So I think maybe when you're older.
But like, what I asked you the other day, I can't remember who had answered me. If I enjoy gaming, his prose, his books, would I like Sandman? Or
absolutely. So, yeah. Further, if you are into the literature at all, he loves literature, and it shows in Sandman.
Okay.
He references or homages or parodies constantly. He's literarily aware at all times.
But for the question that we've asked, Jason asks, how many people are reading Sandman Overture? You're reading
Absolutely. I've just, like I said, the second issue just came out like last week. It's way overdue. It's I think nearly a month late. But yeah, I absolutely want to jump on it.
Okay, and his question, the first one, which is the bigger one, creative teams. He said creative team. Mm-hmm. Who at Marvel is for you the strongest creative team, he said?
I got a couple, actually. It's a toss up between, how am I going to say this, Slott and Kamen Kelly on Superior.
Can we play back last year's podcast?
Yeah, but remember I always said, I backtracked a long time. I said Slott, I have, he's okay, but I have issues with certain things in his writing.
Said he's a quality writer.
Combined with him and the artist, Kamen Kelly, I like two of them together.
This has nothing to do with Superior Spider-Man 30.
absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. My second favorite team is Wade and Sam Lee on Daredevil. Yeah.
You might hazard a guess, I think you were talking about me. It's Fraction and Aja by far. There's no other team that I like as much. And Hawkeye currently does not have Aja on the art. They have that other person who I just can't connect with, and I can't read the book.
Good year. That's a shame.
I don't follow like creative.
Yes, you know that.
But if there's any team that stands out in my awareness, it would be the guys at Hawkeye.
Dave Aja and Matt Fraction.
So I think,
but no, like you, Mark. I'm not sure if it's the same artist, but all the stories that he would hit.
Nope, different artist. Give me one second.
Can't follow. So
It's not that I don't like Kate. I actually quite do. But when Aja is not on art, I have a hard time connecting with the book.
Yeah. He's in a different book.
And he's done some of the Kate stories, like the early ones. He did a couple of them. But now when they switch, I'm just not there.
So just to be different, I will also acknowledge the work that Bendis and Stuart Immonen.
I was going to just...
Bendis
I was just gonna
like,
mention
especially Eminem's art.
It's beautiful.
It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm not always sure about Bendis. I still think he has an issue where voices of characters tend to sound the same.
But as a team.
But as a team and putting out a consistently strong product, Bendis and Eminem on all new X-Men.
Here, here.
And I think Slott and Kevin Cooley. And it's only been two issues, but I like the team on Ms. Marvel. Adrian Alfona and Willow Wilson. I hope they can continue to do that.
Speaking of Marvel, did we like Captain Marvel, the first new one? The new Captain Marvel number one?
Haven't read it.
You haven't read it?
No. I read it It doesn't sign up for me right now.
So we have another listener. This one's from Dwayne from Barbados. So
that's Dwayne.
This is Dwayne Merle from Barbados. So he is he's written on our blog before. He listens to our show consistently, and he has some questions for us as well.
Hey guys, my name is Dwayne. I'm an avid listener, and I always look forward to your podcast. Please keep up the great work. I really enjoy it. I'm just continuing on your review of Forever Eagle number 6 last week. Firstly, let me say I'm not the biggest DC New 52 fan. Most of it to me is just traffic. Forever Eagle showcases much of what is wrong with the New 52. In my opinion, it has been a long, drawn-out mess. And issue number 6 was good, don't get me wrong, but the crossover as a whole has been pretty tiring. It has been, to me, the epitome of what's wrong with crossovers. They can become all-encompassing, like vampires, and just start to drain the personality and life for all the books that are involved. I don't think the New 52 was around long enough to require such an expansive crossover. With that said, with the finale less than a month away, what do you guys think about Forever Evil and the crossover fatigue and DC 52 at this point? Thanks, guys.
I'm going to have to actually meet Wayne and blame a box youth. Because I think we're pretty much in sync for a lot of it. And I'm not sure if Wayne would follow the previous crossovers, like Villain's Month and Trinity War, but DC for me is this huge mess when it comes to crossovers. So,
do you really need the when it comes to crossovers?
He asked us kind of three specific questions. One, the first question was, what do we think about Forever Evil as a whole? Which we kind of talked about last week, so I don't know if we want to go over that again.
See, I wasn't here, and I haven't read Forever Evil. That sounded like a review I could connect with. So, Dwayne, what you just said is how I feel about Forever Evil.
His second part was more interesting. What do you think about crossover fatigue as a whole?
We already know how I feel about that. My thing about Forever Evil is that I don't actually consider that a crossover. Rather more like an event with a couple of titans. There's no crossover in DC. Or, let me see, pretty much no crossovers anymore. Crossovers I see as something that ties into all the books that are being published. Like, remember, there was Extinction
Secret Wars. Back
in the day, Secret Wars, whatnot. Right now, because there's no cohesion in any of the universes. Whatever goes on, like, this, you read Forever Evil, right? Superman is missing somewhere, whatever. Batman is struggling with Lex Luthor or whatever. This buddy's dead about his
Batman books.
Nightwing is strapped to a machine with a bomb in his heart. And we look in their monthly books. There's no mention of it. Nothing is going on.
It didn't happen. You can't prove a thing.
When did it happen? Where did it fit in? There's no attempt to. So I don't call it a crossover. I just think it's just an event with a couple of titans.
And the final one, what do you think of the New 52 as a whole?
We've talked about this mess. Already. You said that already. Yes. In my opinion on DC, you've heard this a million times before. DC was at its strength and its height back around circa Infinite Crisis. After that, they just decided to go 1 year later with school too. And since Marvel started, and God, Marvel was kicking their ass in movies and everything, I didn't say, well, Liberty Strike 7 knew a complete reboot. And I had a lot of hope for it. I was apprehensive because I don't want my old DC to go. I don't want my continuity to go and my history and my legacy characters and whatnot. But I said, you know, I'll give it a try, it'll be cool. But it's been a mess.
Yeah, well, so thanks, Dwayne, for your questions. Clearly, we are in sync with you. We're all fatigued, especially by DC.
Yeah. The only thing, sadly, and ironically, the only thing I can read from DC and enjoy is Batman.
That is ironic. Proper irony. Fine.
Only thing. Yeah. I can't even say that. Honestly.
Yeah. So thanks this week to Dwayne and Jason. We're going to try and do this more often with all of you listeners. If you're interested in leaving a comment, it doesn't have to be audio. You can always tweet us. You can always leave us a Facebook message on the Outsiders Comic Book Underground. You can tweet us at Outsiders Comics, or you can leave a message on the blog. And if you want to call us, let us know.
Comic Book Reviews.
All right, and so we move on to some reviews. And should we start with the biggest news of the week?
No.
Should we?
No.
Yes. No. Yes. Yes. Yeah,
sure, Wade. Yeah. What's the biggest news of the
week? Oh, okay. Well, in case you guys have been living under a rock or you had your internet service disconnected, Peter Parker is back. And I'm going to do my happy dance now.
It's terrible. Just
turn it on, Gibson.
Gibson's not on board.
You can't dance.
Yeah, well, that's my happy dance. Goblin Nation. We are at issue number what? Number four of it?
Yeah. Number four, five.
So this was completely left field. I didn't see it coming in this issue at all. I thought it was going to happen in the finale.
It's going to happen in April. Yeah, right.
As you know, Otto's been having a hard time keeping track of everything Goblin's been doing. Goblin, and I put in quotes, Norman Osborn.
The Goblin.
Right. You got a bunch of goblins running around. So it opens with Spock and Miguel O'Hara fighting some giant robots that Jonah Jameson got from Alchemax to send out. More on that later. On the Mindscape, too, Peter is still struggling with the losing his memories and trying to live through Otto's life. The Avengers are fighting all these goblin kids and goblins all over the city. It feels like a real big something happening. It's huge. You feel the book is, and Slott has really captured the momentous occasion.
Yes. As a backdrop, New York City is devastating.
Yeah. The momentous occasion.
You can't overstate how bad New York is right now.
It feels like something's really happening. It feels big. You're excited. Every page you turn, you're holding your breath. So Otto is trying his hardest, but he's struggling. He's no Peter Parker. so he's Menace tricks him into a subway tunnel where there's a kid that he would have saved a while back with cardiac and got there on the ground illegal hospital, and the kid's on tracks on a train is coming. Otto has this moment of crisis where he has to say, should I risk my life saving this kid? But if I do that, then who's gonna save Anna Maria, who's currently being captured and held by the goblins? When he has that moment, Peter reveals himself in the Mindscape and says, your ass better jump and save that kid, because that's what you have to do. So he does, and then there's a confrontation. Otto, contrary to what you may think, realizes that, you know what? And he says to Peter, you are the bigger man, you are the better man, you are the better Spider-Man, you are the superior Spider-Man. And I'm looking at Gibson as I say this. And he takes the body, he goes back to Parker Industries, where he hooks himself back up to the machine, and he erases every bit of himself from Spider-Man's body. And we are left with Peter Parker back in charge, saying, you know what, it's my turn to fix things. So, I mean, a lot of great stuff happened in this book. One of the bigger reveals was that it appears that if Liz Osborn isn't the current Green Goblin, she's at least assisting him. Because she's seen holding a goblin mask at one point, and she says to little Normie, everything I'm doing it for you. Is the next issue the conclusion, or we got two more issues?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, so big stuff is going to happen next. Peter's back, I hope. There is some speculation.
Is this also your wallpaper?
It's going to be my wallpaper.
This is currently my wallpaper.
Yeah. There's some speculation that this is all a big troll or a ploy by Otto. Otto clearly knows that he's not equipped to handle
for this task,
so he's brought back in Peter. And I'm thinking that once it's over, he may rear his ugly fat head again.
Yeah, he's shown the ability to transfer his brain to robots.
Right,
because
he's erased it, but it has to be stored somewhere. Yeah. Some kind of backup.
So the erasure, while it seemed for the faithful waiting for the return, that seemed like the event. I don't think it's over yet.
It also may have been a way for the creative team to give Otto a way out that he still seems heroic. Because if he comes out and tries to grab hold again, if he doesn't fight him off,
would actually be tired, you don't see that again.
Yeah, but I mean, I would love to see him get his ass kicked, but, but I am happy. When I read this book, I read it on my lunch hour at work. When I read it, I shit you not, water came in my eyes. I had to steady myself. I was so happy to see Peter saying, I'm taking it back, all of it. And to see Peter raise up and put on back in his classic costume and put on a mask.
Yeah, he took off the black costume and got back into the red and blue.
I liked the gesture and everything.
Yeah.
But
I like the superior costume. It's a cool look. Yeah, it's a modern update. I like black, but, it's just to have Peter back.
I mean, this has happened many times before where he's returned to the red and blue, mm-hmm. and that's a momentous occasion that we're familiar with.
Yeah.
So I think it connected.
Yeah, no, it's
back
a signifier.
Peter.
Yeah. Yeah,
hallelujah. Are we kind of read it already, or should we get everybody use it? Because I give it a 6. I don't really give it a 6, but I give it a 6. It was great.
And note for new listeners, we rate out of 5.
Yeah.
So.
As I discussed previously, I had a couple issues with it, and I was given it overall 3.5. It's up to 4 now, primarily on the strength of Kamen Cooley's art. Everything in this book feels momentous. Yeah. It feels important.
It's actually some of the best work that he's done to me.
It's
a lot of stuff, but it's,
yeah, it has a lot of movements. Really kinetic, good. It's energetic. I love it. Yeah,
it's really, really strong work in this.
What was he doing before this? Anybody knows?
I can pick it up. I don't know. But I know one of us is not this pleased. Okay, so before
moving on, our next
before before Mark pisses all over this issue, I want to say there are a few things that left me a little bit nagging. One of them was it seemed a little bit quick. After building all of this stuff for Superior Spider-Man, for him to just roll over. After,
you want two pages, it's like two pages.
To be like, you know what? You're right. I am actually not good at this. And just erase himself so that Peter can return. Seems a bit rushed, and there's one more issue. And also, the reveal about Liz Allen, I liked. But I'm not sure if we're supposed to infer that she's actually the brains behind it, or that she's just another goblin. Yeah. I wasn't quite clear about that.
Yeah,
although it's a good reveal. Yeah. I mean, she has a lot of links to Harry.
Obviously. Somebody told me Harry's in hiding right now or something. I don't know. Maybe Harry. You never know.
Well, wasn't she married to Harry at one point? Right. Yeah. So, I mean, if links to goblins exist for her. But if she was the Goblin King,
that'd be cool.
That was very unexpected. Wasn't sure about that, but that was kind of a cool thing. Mm-hmm. Other than that, overall, I liked it. It was nice. It was a good return for Peter.
Yeah.
I hope Anna Marie is not killed next issue.
I really don't care.
Just to get rid of her. I know nobody else cares but me in this room, but I just think it would be... Oh, thank you. I just don't think it would... Just because it's kind of a thread that I like them to follow through.
I want Goblin Nation to end with Peter in Mary Jane's arms.
Not gonna happen.
That's what
stab
I want.
All
not gonna happen.
That's what I want.
I actually hope it does not finish.
That's what I want.
Because I want Peter, if this is really Peter's return, to have to deal with
the
stuff.
At least that happened. I knew it wasn't you, and then, Mary Jane, I love you. And that's what
more likely for him to end up with, what's the
Carly?
Monster Carly.
Yeah.
Than MJ. All the time that Otto has been inside his body, he and MJ haven't had a lot of interaction since he's broken up with her, so that would be kind of weird. So I hope Anna Maria survives this arc, and hope it gets.
But if she does, what would they do with her? I mean,
I just want to see what they do with her. And I know nobody else cares, but there is a potential love interest, which is obviously not going to continue.
Yeah,
who is? He has no interest in her, but
shallow bastard.
But the last person in his body did, and she I think had interest in him. So it'd be interesting to see them continue.
There's something down here we did. Last person in your body
had interest in her, and she's not model-esque. She's a small person who happens to be extremely smart. She calls him out on his shit. She was a different type of character, and I actually like her more.
Peter's never had an interest in midgets.
I like her more than Carly. I want to see her continue in some way. Even if she's no longer in thing, it's just a background character, that's fine.
She can come and run fucking.
But I don't want her fridged. I really don't.
Alright.
Take it away, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh boy.
I think for me that Spirits by Man 30 has raised a question of whether or not Dan Slott sometimes works with a ghostwriter. Because this book is, it really isn't that great. It's honestly full of plot holes. Somebody said that would have been dealt with early in the series or completely glossed over in this issue, and I'm gonna get them.
I was just gonna ask you.
Also, I see this issue as a march back to status quo. One of the reasons that I have been enjoying Superior Spider-Man during this run is that it has done different things with the character Spider-Man and the icon. I'm sorry, the character Peter Parker icon Spider-Man. So I don't want all that stuff to be erased. Yes, I agree. Okay, Peter gets his body back, great. But there's so many different and interesting story threads that are left dangling that I just don't want to be set seen swept under the rug. And this issue does a good job of, you know, point out some of them. First off, New York City is full of superheroes. The only one that's recently moved, I guess, would have been Daredevil. But you've got the Avengers, you've got the Fantastic Four, you've got Mighty Avengers, all kinds of different teams. The X-Men are probably, at least one X-Men team, probably isn't any more than, you know, Blackbird right away.
Yet, the Avengers are apparently swamped dealing with Venom-Bin thugs. They're only a handful of goblinized antagonists, and most of them are running around either engaging Otto or targeting or trying to target members of Peter's family. So I'm not really quite sure how the Avengers, who run around saving the world every other week, are suddenly having their hands full combating.
That's comics in general. I've raised that point before about why when a hero's in trouble, why he doesn't call in somebody else to help. There's so many of them running around.
But especially in New York City.
Yeah, know? But I've talked before.
They made a pass at that. Oh, the Avengers are all busy.
You saw it.
They had Thor doing X and Y, and Iron Man's trying to do this and that. Yeah, they tried to imply that they were all completely occupied somehow, even though there's 1,000 Avengers.
Yeah, I don't get it. And the sad thing with this issue is that you don't really get a good idea of who the Avengers in that one panel, who they're actually fighting. So you see another panel where...
Quote, enemies.
Iron Man... and Captain America rescuing people. I mean, really? Anyhow, so you've got Otto, who is suddenly given up. Otto, who is pretty much like a cockroach, and he is taking over Peter body pretty much for me, establishing him as Spider-Man's greatest enemy. Yeah. So he's able to do all these great things or interesting things as a villain and as this superior Spider-Man guy. But suddenly, the love of his life is in danger, and he's figuring, I need somebody to do this. That doesn't really fly for me.
He knows he ain't shit.
I'm kind of worried by... Alright, Peter regains his memories in the mindscape of his entire life.
Yeah.
But they're seen through the lens of Otto. These are not Peter's memories he's recovering.
That felt really contrived.
Now, you see, I wonder about that part. Because Otto got... more heroic having seen Peter's memories. Seen Peter's memories from Peter's perspective.
Yeah.
I wonder if there will be a shift in Peter's personality having seen his own memories from Otto's perspective.
But didn't Otto purge those memories? Just going back to that part of the time in the memory doesn't magically bring it back.
Exactly. That's the thing.
that part really was contrived.
That's a huge plot hole. But
yeah,
that,
I agree.
Peter's entire return hinges on that.
Strange science.
all of Peter's original memories, Peter's entire personal.
What he was given at that moment.
Okay, so this is going a bit long. Had Peter Parker not returned this issue, but everything else up to that point, how would you have rated the book before Peter's return?
I was still giving it probably a 4.5 or a 5. It was really exciting and fast paced.
For Gibson, had Peter Parker not returned at the end of this book, but the rest of the book, up to the point where he decides to switch out his memories.
I'm sure
you how did you like No, had Peter not returned, how would you have rated
I'm serious.
All the rest of the
book. As opposed to the last issue, you felt this one was much weaker?
This issue is weak, honestly. You got all this stuff happening.
It's just because Peter came back.
Right, you got Miguel O'Hara, who is suddenly struggling to fight out a bunch of Spider Slayers that he helped create. Really, the Avengers, the world's mightiest heroes, are struggling to save New York against hired thugs with guns.
Yeah, the one with Thor was funny. Right. It was like really.
The Avengers alone have people like Thor, Iron Man, Hyperion, all these.
Do you think that Hyperion alone would be able to take out the
But Mark, at least they were given a nod to say, okay, we recognize that that's a problem, so look, they're tied up.
Yeah.
Alright, well,
Captain
this is
a good... thing that was like a cool gesture, but didn't make sense, was Peter donning the classic suit. The reason Otto changed suits is because the classic suit got trashed some issues back. There should be no classic suit.
No, he has tons of them. That's well established.
Otto has tons of suits.
That is a plot point that is interesting.
No, Otto wanted a new suit because he thought that it was
inefficient.
It got trashed, but I'm sure he had Peter just to one suit. But Otto would not want it. It's just suit is inferior, it's inefficient. I'm going to make a new suit with gadgets and arms and shit and all that. That's why Otto wants some new
suits. He's had suits in other locations and stuff.
Your rating for Superior Spider-Man is...
The art bumps out a lot for me. The art for this, especially for the entire series, is pretty solid. That would get me for about maybe 2.5.
Alright, so this was the biggest issue probably for this week. If you agree with Mark Gibson or you want to curse him out, like I said before, you could always tweet us at Outsiders Comment. leave us a comment at Outsiders Comic Book Underground, or write a message on our blog at outsiderscomics@blogspot.com.
And Mark Gibson's personal phone number is...
Moving on to our next issue.
PM me on Facebook, we'll give you that answer.
Our next issue is Daredevil from Marvel. It is a number one because Marvel loves to reboot stuff. And why not? It boosts sales for that one. So this is actually interesting because it's a digital only right comic that they are putting out to get people. Because this series was going on with the same creators and was doing fairly well. But they want to get more people to buy their digital stuff. So Daredevil number one is being written by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, right? Samnee's doing the art.
Yeah.
Colorist is Javier Rodriguez. And it features Daredevil in a new city. He's in San Francisco. So having come out as Daredevil, everybody knows his secret identity. We see him working with the San Francisco police. And
CSI.
He is basically every single one of the CSI machines. He is working all the different cases all at the same time.
I'm better now.
Smelling stuff, finding stuff, hearing stuff. And he has teamed up with them on a kidnapping case. He's figured out what's going on. He puts on the Daredevil outfit, and we get a cool little quick recap of who he is. And he rescues a little girl who's been kidnapped. And we don't know why she's been kidnapped. But he's chased by the kidnappers who seem to have Green Goblin-esque riders. And the whole issue basically is him fighting them in the skies over San Francisco. He's impeded by the fact that he doesn't know San Francisco like he knows New York. And the fact that the little girl has a bomb inside of her.
That always slows me down.
Yeah, that will slow anyone down. Mm-hmm. He's got a little help coming from... I forgot to write down the name of the girl who's helping him. I couldn't figure out if she was a cop or not.
No, this is friend.
This is friend from
New York.
Right, she's a lawyer, right?
Right, girlfriend,
Kristen McDuffie.
Thank you. Kristen McDuffie. And so they are going to open a law firm together. But most of the issue is basically him trying to maneuver through San Francisco, not knowing, and saving this little girl's life. And so the issue finishes with Kristen McDuffie and Matt Murdock in little writing. Kristen McDuffie and Matt Murdock opening up an attorney at law firm. And somehow we find out that Foggy was his partner. Did Foggy die in the end of the last series? No, right?
Yeah, I was confused about the ending. What does that mean?
I don't know what that last part means about was.
Yeah,
that means he was watching them.
Is that Foggy was watching them?
Yeah. But he said, Foggy, I assume that's Foggy. I'm not sure it's Foggy. That could be Bullseye too. Remember Bullseye was...
Yeah, there's some guy who's commenting on it.
Right, saying was. I don't know if it's Foggy.
Well,
listen, I know Cancel would make it smaller, but
still,
it's a little Foggy.
As a side note, they flash past the urn on Matt's desk, so Matt is certain he has the remains.
Right, so Foggy died, right? Is the thing.
So it could be somebody finding out that Foggy died, and this is a rebel.
I don't remember Foggy dying. I
don't
remember happening.
Yeah. So we have a bunch of new things. We have the... because the last issue... The last series, Foggy was sick but still alive. And now he may or may not be dead. We have a Daredevil as a public hero. People know that it's Matt Murdock. And he's in a new city, which operates in new ways. And have...
I don't think you get more different than Hell's Kitchen to San Francisco.
Yeah, it's a totally different type of city. It's opening up. He doesn't know the city. There's basically the issue is a kind of exciting kind of thing for you to see him using his powers in a new city.
And it feels
trying
fun.
To keep
it
up.
Feels like he's enjoying
right.
it. It's exhilarating for the most part. The book, even though he's, dealing with a little girl who's in trouble, for the most part, it feels exhilarating.
Mm-hmm. So the last part was a little bit confusing, but that will bring you back. But more on, over, it just felt like a very kind of strong, solid Daredevil issue. So the art's really great. Jason called in, talked about a move to a lot more flat colors. This is one of those type of things where there's a lot of flat, separate coloring. Kind of very Silver Age feel to some of the art, although the colors are more contemporary. And overall, we see the introduction of some new characters, which I thought was very cool. And that's it. Daredevil's back in a new series, which feels very much like the last Daredevil series. So Mark Waid continues to be solid with it. What did you guys think?
I'm tired of all these goddamn number ones. I mean, seriously.
I'm going to give some of that.
Okay, I'm
okay.
Actually not.
Let's articulate that a little bit more. What is the issue? So, what is
guys I remember back in the day where a comic reaching 200 issues or 500 issues or 700 issues was a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? I understand that you can have rotating or changing creative teams. That's fine. I can understand I'm looking to take a character in a different direction. That's fine. But having every shift, like Daredevil's a glaring example, the creative team hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying it's an all number one. Right?
Yeah, well, this one is different in that it's not, there's no physical book for it yet. They might change that. But the other thing where this is happening is the new Wolverine book has the same creators, Paul Cornell. And the artist is on that. And then Captain Marvel book is also redone the same way. Those are two that, yeah, they're doing the same thing. Whereas I think the other number ones...
I mean, Magneto is fine. Miss Marvel is fine. Mm-hmm. New character, whatever.
But why restart these books with the same
creators? But they're, the sense of continuity is kind of shifting. I think Jason, in his calling, raised something similar. I think we should just start publishing trade paperbacks.
I've called for this. Call for this on the group.
Yeah.
I've said the need for serial monthly books is no longer there. When you had a subscription model, it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
But without the subscription model, people just buy the stories they want. And in that case, filler issues and that kind of stuff no longer works.
Yeah.
So I'm all for moving to story-based titles. I want Goblin Nation as its own book, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It doesn't need to be in the Spirit Spider-Man title.
Yeah.
I think that's the future of the comic business. I don't think long running titles are the way to go anymore.
Correct. I think comics should now start coming out like novels where you have let's say it's Dresden Files, for example. So you can have Dresden Files, Full Moon, and that's its own separate book, separate story, and the characters will continue through the series, but you're getting them in these separate, not quite standalone, but separate story arcs. I think that's the way it should go.
Free advice, Big Two.
Because number one doesn't mean anything anymore.
No, it really doesn't. Not only that, it's an all digital number one. What are you going to do? Collect it?
But what do you think about the actual issue, guys?
I liked it. We're 3.5 for me overall.
I know, I was never a huge Daredevil fan.
I was, but this wasn't the Daredevil I'm a huge fan of. This is good.
I found it, the way they played that trope where in New York, you would see Spider-Man leaping off of the Empire State Building, and he shouldn't step up. And I'm like, why shouldn't it? You know? And here, Daredevil's kind of thrown, but if there are not really that many skyscrapers in San Fran.
Yeah, he's got like an 8-block radius.
But that was cool. It's an okay book, but...
Yeah, like, Ollie said, this isn't Miller's Daredevil, but I like the lighter tape Waid has on it. Sammy's art makes it really fun to read. I was enjoying the previous series, so this is just a continuation for me. I do not like the constant restarting, and I get the reason for you say the trading back would work. I understand, but
they're halfway between the methods,
yeah.
And it's messy the way it's going right now.
But as a traditionalist, it goes against what I like, and it's hard for me to accept that I would have monthlies the same way. But, you know,
I think they should just set a goal of a number of books they want done per month and plan a number of stories accordingly.
Yeah.
for me, that would actually mean I could read more comics, because one of the things I'm having trouble with is following that many titles every
month. Yeah, I sometimes miss stuff.
And it they're scheduling too, where you have the arcs in particular, where they're busting their asses to put out 20-something pages in the space of a month or whatever.
Assuming they don't have two or three other books.
What is that? Is drawing is harder nowadays, or is it more complex, more detailed? I mean, we had games like Kirby that would put 4 or 5 titles every month.
People were working on more than one book is part of the problem.
Kirby's working like 5 or 6 books
at a time. And I think also it may just be the fact that the turnover time is more. The books, people who are asking for books come out twice a month.
Even before that was happening, you had books being delayed and people can't fill in artists.
It's an interesting question. One I'm not equipped to answer, but I think it's interesting to know. Maybe we should push further to do some research and see if the art process has changed that much these days that it takes more time.
I mean, we have a lot of digital help. So I'm just
I'm actually wondering in my head if the digital methods actually create more work, if there's work that has to be done to reach a certain level.
Yeah.
It might just be creative too. I mean, if you're not.
Well, what Wade's saying on flat creativity, Kirby was doing this, 50 years ago. What's the problem, guys?
So we have that. It's not a big issue, but it was kind of in the background. I thought it was kind of interesting that the little girl they rescue is the daughter of the deputy mayor, Charlotte Hester, blonde that was in there. She seems to be potentially a character that they're going to have more often in this book. And she ticks the box for LGBT character. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. So just for me, I thought that was really cool. So
you want a box tick? That's what we're doing now?
I do, yes. I want a box tick. No, it's not I want a box tick. It was just that it was unexpected. I was like, oh, that's cool.
I have good news if you're a Native American DC fan.
Oh, my God. That is so... we'll talk about that later, how ridiculous that is. No, what I meant was, it was a character, the fact that she happened to be a lesbian mom was not trumpeted or talked about. There was no article about it. It wasn't played up in the book. It was just like a matter of fact thing that they just introduced. Oh, it's her daughter. And I was like, oh,
which is
great.
A solid approach, because beating in your face with it has clearly not worked.
And I know nobody else wants to talk about that. I just want to put it out there. I thought it was really cool.
I'm getting tired.
We should move on to it.
Oh, we've got this new character coming on, he's gay, or she's gay, or...
Or she's Native American, and they fill a box.
Yeah, the simple thing is, conspicuously diverse.
The reason why that new character, DC character, is so ridiculous is because they want to trumpet the fact that she's Native American. And
so
then,
Native American!
And then, basically, she's like a stereotype of every Native American character that has ever been in comics.
Only way it could have been worse is if she put one hand up and went, how?
Well, she's not wearing feathers. So that's, like I said, I mean, that
we should be thankful.
The new character, she's the new character in Justice League. What's it called?
Well,
it's not in Justice League International.
No, it's
Justice League.
The U Unlimited. No, it's something. It's JLU though.
Right, not Canada anymore.
No, I changed it from Canada, but they're going to be based in Canada.
Right, and this character is First Nation, which is great. She's not wearing feathers like every other character who's Native American. That's great. And then you look at the character's costume and you realize that her character is basically wearing a breechcloth in spandex. And her powers are linked to the seasons.
This is the way of my people.
She's mystical. And I was just like, oh. And then she's the only non-white character in that whole team.
Well,
everybody else
Martian
is...
Manhunter.
Everybody, well, Martian Manhunter. Everybody else is blonde and blue-eyed.
Yeah.
Martian Manhunter could be blonde, blood if he wanted.
Like, the fact that you're like, oh, we need to add more diversity, we're going to ignore all the other characters we have established of color, create a new one, because they realize that their lineup is entirely blonde, blue-eyed, white people. Sorry, that was a tangent. We can get back to the comics we're reviewing today. So our next review is Aquaman, and that will be reviewed by Mark Gibson.
So, we're here with Aquaman number 29. A couple of interesting things happening in this issue. Aquaman discovers that his almighty trident has been pilfered.
You know what? Guys, I'm going to step out for a second because I haven't read this book and I really want to read it. And I don't want it spoiled. So, so if you guys don't want it spoiled either, you guys can fast forward a couple minutes ahead. So I'm going to do that right now.
Fast forwarding.
Right, now that Wade's in the room.
So yeah, the trident was stolen by a doctor, Daniel Evans, who was basically poking around Amnesty Bay, where Aquaman made his home. His entire goal was to borrow Aquaman's trident, which Aquaman just completely left lying around in his home unlocked. Silly rabbit. The reason the good doctor borrows the trident is that it's an Atlantean artifact, and he wants to use it to unlock some doorway, which he believes from his research will connect Earth to Atlantis. And boy, is he wrong. In fact, the trident is used to unlock this portal, but it's pretty much like a portal to like hell, or a portal to like a prison dimension, where all these gigantic monsters come streaming out. And these monsters are happy to get out because they've been imprisoned by ancient Atlanteans at the end of some war. And the book also does mention the kind of, for me, the book does a good job of being a crossover issue because it mentions or tries to connect with Swamp Thing. I don't know if you've been following the Channel 52 preview at the end of the DC books, but I think it was like last month. There was some indication of Aquaman and the Swamp Thing being in conflict, and the Swamp Thing does make a very brief cameo in this issue. Meanwhile, Aquaman somehow gets to the island where this portal is in the middle of the Atlantic, and he steps in and starts throwing punches. Meanwhile, trying to interrogate the good Dr. Evans as to why he stole his trident. The big reveal for this, and I don't know if you guys are following Wonder Woman at all, but this book, it also connects with Swamp Thing, as well as making connections, however loosely, to the Greek pantheon in Wonder Woman. Because this issue is the first appearance of the new 52 Hercules, who went to aid, back in the ancient times, he went to aid the Atlanteans in their war against these gigantic monsters, and the Atlantean king at the time made a tough choice to seal the portal with Hercules on the other side. So Hercules bursts back in, he is confused, and from his time being prisoned with the monsters, he and Aquaman go toe-to-toe for a little bit, but Hercules starts working the floor with Aquaman. And the book ends with Hercules about to toss Aquaman, bloody and battered, into the same portal that he would have escaped from. So yeah, a couple of interesting things happening with Aquaman 29. What do you guys think?
I like the art on this book still. That's not the same thing, but when we're talking about, like, I don't always like Aquaman, but I do like the writing on it, but the art, especially, I have been enjoying. That being said, this story was cool. Like you said, why would he leave it at home just there? It seemed like a plot device to get the story going, but overall, I thought it was enjoyable. Not as strong as some of the earlier Aquaman stuff, but it was enjoyable to read it. Like, if I had just picked it up, it would, I was like, oh, okay, good jump on point, but not as strong as some of the earlier stories in Aquaman. So I give it 3.5.
As you mentioned, I don't get to read as many comics as I would like, and if I would like to read comics, they would not be easy. So I didn't make it to Aquaman this week.
The writer on
Aquaman's issue
is Jeff Parker, as Jeff Johns would have stepped away from writing who's on Aquaman recently.
Yeah, so that was part of it. Maybe it's not as strong because of that.
But I am glad to see this is a book that's trying to make a greater tie or link between different books in the DC, the new DC universe. Our next book is another all-new number one coming from Marvel, and this is the all-new Ghost Rider. This is by Felipe Smith, Trad Moore, and Val Staples. Now, for me, this is a good reason to have a number one. The current Ghost Rider, he's still running around with Thunderbolts. This is a new guy, completely new circumstance. If you've been following the previews, you know that this is a Ghost Rider who isn't actually a rider he drives, so he should be Ghost and Driver, but that's just a Anyway, so this guy, Reyes, he's living in East Los Angeles. He's Latino, Robbie Reyes. He's also a mechanic. And the book, it has some really interesting art. But I'll get that in a minute. So you see, it basically does a good job of setting up his life, who he is, before he actually becomes the newest Spirit of Vengeance. He's got a penchant for, dispensing justice with his knuckles already. As the story, as one of the early events, shows him going up against gun-wielding thugs who are trying to jack his little brother for his motorized wheelchair. His brother who is, paralyzed from the waist down.
He's also mentally challenged as well. You know? Based on his speech pattern.
He just seems hyper like a kid.
He seems a little impaired.
Man. Physically disabled. I don't think that they
say. I think mentally, but the way he was talking.
Okay. Basically, the book would have started with you saying Robbie, he's doing some work at his job as a mechanic. He's fixing this huge jet black muscle car. Turns out that he goes back to work later to, borrow the muscle car from his boss to compete in some illegal drag racing. Think Fast and Furious style. And he's doing it with a purpose. He's trying to get money to improve the life of his little brother, as well as himself. It shows that he's kind of like the guardian of his little brother. So the race goes on, starts off Fast and Furious style. Robbie in his souped up beast of a car takes the lead. It seems he's going to win a bunch of money until the cops show up, complete this chasing squad cars and helicopter support. Robbie tries his best, but is unable to lose the pursuing helicopter and finds himself in a dead-end alley. He comes to the car, the police don't move, and he is gunned down in a hail of bullets. I mean, seriously, that panel is hardcore. But it turns out that the muscle car he borrowed from his boss is actually full of, what was it, drugs, little pills. I think actually it's blue. Anyway, so the, what I assume are police or SWAT or whatever, they take the duffel bags of pills and set fire to the crime scene, including the car and Robbie's denote corpse. But it seems that Robbie was dead. He is possessed by the Spirit of Vengeance, and he comes back as all new, completely different looking Ghost Rider.
Ghost Speed Racer.
Yeah, that's like pretty good. Ghost Speed. Ghost Speed Racer. And it shows him jumping in the car, which is now a wash in flame, and driving off into the night while his little brother sleeps. Guys, what do you think?
It's a weird concept. Trabmore, who I previously enjoyed on the Luther Strode books, is a weird fit for Ghost Rider story. I'm not too sure how I feel about this book. I could like it, but to me the issue felt fast, like it was over before I even started
reading. Which is appropriate.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like I didn't really get much of a story. I said, am I missing pages? It felt, and it was too rushed. And for me personally, it suffered from a lack of exposition. I needed some stuff said.
I agree with that, actually. Yeah. It's like, it takes that you know what an origin story is as given, and doesn't fill in a lot of detail at all. It's just, blam, here's an origin.
I was like, what, I missed something? So that took it down for me, but I am willing to give it the second issue a shot, if it picks up, but it wasn't solved for me.
I actually like the art on this book
a lot. Yeah, I like it too, just that.
Because it feels very... manga-esque. Yeah. No, there's a clear manga influence to it, like the way some panels are stretched out and the car burning, the expression and stuff. And it certainly is kinetic. The drag racing part of it looks really great. I did think some of the wording wasn't there, but I think it was because it's supposed to feel really fast. The last Ghost Rider series had a female Ghost Rider, and it was kind of a grindhouse 70s feel. That got cancelled quick.
She was a motorcycle rider?
Clearly they think that this might catch on people more. We'll see. I'm not sure either about this book. I just think if maybe they'd release this book before, like when Fast and Furious was really popular, people might have grabbed it more.
Yeah.
I'd argue that Fast and Furious right now is probably back at the height of its popularity.
Right, it's back to being popular. So maybe this, it looks really good. I'm not sure, but it was a solid first issue, I thought.
I have many questions about the last three pages.
Yeah, me too. Maybe. I mean, what happened? What?
The Marvel. The
you know what this book needs? Some Nicolas Cage.
The new Marvel books certainly all look different and feel different.
Which is good. Excellent.
Which is good. So, you look at She-Hulk, you look at Black Widow, Miss Marvel, this one.
Magneto,
Moon Knight. They're all very different. Marvel is trying new things.
I may be a tiny bit biased, but I think the immense success of Hawkeye is part of what prompted this
book. Yes.
So you had an unusual art team with an unusual character, and they did gangbusters. So they now said, let's do them all. Yeah. Everything we can do with new, with unusual characters, art teams,
well,
no more house style,
give them all a chance. They decided, if team books like Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers and X-Men look like our old stuff, older stuff, more other more superhero stuff, which they kept, then they can let the solo books go in a few directions, because the Thor book and the Captain America book, even before the success of Hawkeye, also go in new directions. So I think they're allowing the solo books to have a little bit more scope for originality, while keeping the team books be kind of where you go
superhero-y.
And that's fine. This particular book, not sure if people will connect to it, but certainly is the most manga-looking book of the Marvel stuff, and that will bring fans in.
It's completely different from what you expect from what Ghost Rider was. Yeah,
I don't like the mask. I don't like the look of the face.
Yeah.
I don't understand if he's literally Zarathos or some other kind of spirit.
He looks like one of those Japanese mask things.
I don't think he is. And if that's the case,
he looks like one of those Japanese mask, demon mask things that you would see. Yeah.
Could be a shame down here, right?
I liked it. I like the fact that they didn't really butcher the origin. They just got out there, boom, and what happens next. So.
Well, there's a lot of work, I think, to establish who this new character is first.
We need to connect to him. I have no connection to this guy. It's just like,
well, I thought
like some
this
dude.
Issue tried to make you feel who he was so that there's less about the...
But it did it in a way that just read as a trope. It's just, here's an origin guy. He stops the guy from being bullied. That's just so generic.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything else to distinguish him. So I don't have a connection yet. He just feels like any other person. Like Ms. Marvel.
It's not in a monologue. It's not in a dialogue. It's not in a dialogue. I don't know him.
Yeah,
I need to get
him. Yeah, it's funny. The Ms. Marvel book
in two pages.
Yeah, established who the character was.
Absolutely.
Right.
Completely.
Like you tell people words are not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, but the thing is also interactions, because you get who the character is. Who Kamala Khan is.
Yeah, she's talking to people, right?
With two other teenagers,
you
get the kind of thing of, oh, she's not this and she's this. And this one, he's interacting with his brother, but you don't get kind of the thing of who the older brother is.
Mm.
But it was a good start. The art brought up for me.
I'll try it again.
Three. I don't know if it's going to be strong enough, but.
I'm going to leave it 2.5. I'm halfway between on this book.
I'm also giving it 2.5.
Well, I'm not going to online rate this book higher than Spirit Spider-Man 30, so it's going to get a 2 from me.
Is he going to what?
A 3.
This is higher than Superior Spider-Man?
Yeah,
he can't even give it a 1.
You are high.
If Superior Spider-Man was just Kevin Kelly with no words.
Out of your mind.
I'm sorry, that's the way I feel, honestly. I mean,
I think you're so biased against the return of Peter Parker.
That is it.
That you are not
it's
seeing
not that
straight.
Absolutely
that issue is full of holes.
That is absolutely it.
You have been taking the drugs that were in the cup.
What's the opposite of Kool-Aid?
I mean, that is ridiculous. Yeah, you do whatever the opposite is of drinking the Kool-Aid. You are vomiting the Kool-Aid. Oh, no, I cannot. This book was not better than Superior Spider-Man.
Come on, there's no plot holes there. No plot holes.
Moving on to our final book, please.
Are we going to review
Images, Real Heroes by Brian Hitch. Funny enough, this book is Hitch's first book that he writes and pencils. It's also inked by Paul Neary, who used to ink Alan Davis, whose style is very, very similar to Brian Hitch's. So I thought that's probably why they got him on, which is nice. The story is essentially, what if Robert Downey Jr. and the rest of the Avengers cast themselves, the actors, got sucked into a parallel universe where the characters actually existed but died and they were expected to become those characters?
So Avengers Galaxy Quest.
Yeah. Me and Bishop with Tim Allen, right? Yeah. I remember that was good. Yeah, so the book opens up with a big superhero action scene, just like the Battle of New York and the Avengers. But eventually you realize that, if you know what the book is, what you realize that you're watching the movie. So you see the actors actually in the cinema watching the movie, and there's a big press conference and stuff. The actors are pretty much what you expect actors to be. Robert Downey Jr. character is supposed to be a recovering alcoholic and drug user, but he's in the bathroom snorting cocaine and fucking a groupie.
Lawsuit in 3, 2.
Yeah. Well, the black character who's a speedster is a rap artist, youngster, and there's an older actress who's rekindling her career, and a younger actress, and there's a paraplegic character who plays basically Hulk character. He's in a wheelchair, in his character's in a wheelchair as well, and his chair morphs into like a big battle suit or stuff like that. So it's basically.
So question: these actors move into an alternative universe where they have powers.
Well, we don't know that yet. What happens is that there's a big movie. There's a big press conference where the studio promises a big surprise, and there's a big working model of one of the giant robots that destroys the city in the movie, and this robot suddenly starts attacking the crowd, killing people, and the actors all rush into the building, everybody's screaming and panicking, and they follow this guy through a door, and the guy, they end up in a ruined version of New York, and this is in where are we, whatever.
Oh yeah, the premiere was in like LA or something.
Right, so they're in New York now, but it's a ruined New York. And they're like, where are we, whatever. And the guy says, all right, you know what? This is actually where your characters actually exist. The Olympian and whoever and whatnot. And they died. And we need you to become these people. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about? And that's how the book ends. So we don't know if they're going to be granted powers, if they have them, what's going to happen. Like I was saying, the concept is not terribly original. But Hitch does a good job. I normally don't let see artists train or write a book. But he does a good job with dialogue. It feels real. It feels like somebody he has some help. Maybe he is a talented writer. I don't know. But it was fun to read, and his art elevates it. So if there are any holes, his art is just beautiful to look at. So I enjoyed it completely. I personally give it I give it a 4. It was a strong book for me.
Okay. Dear God.
I haven't read it.
You haven't read it.
So, but what do you think about the idea of them plotting 9/11 and?
Yeah, they plotted 9/11 into the actual the movie that was destroyed in that thing. It was the robots were called? Some of the D, I can't remember. But anyway, I think enough time has passed that it doesn't affect me one way or the other.
You don't think he did that for the emotional impact of?
Is it really gonna have an emotional impact? That still really brings up a reaction. Not kind of
like, yeah, it does.
It brings a reaction for quite a few people still. So I wonder, we're not Americans,
right?
So, but for Americans, it's still a significant issue.
I don't think the reaction is going
to
be
done to kind of because people will then immediately feel like that has an emotional resonance. I wonder if
But I don't think it's going to have quite the impact he was hoping for at this point anymore. But maybe he was aiming for that. I kind of glossed over that, to be honest, myself. But like you said, I'm not American, so. And Gibson's good. We know Gibson's gonna. We know this is gonna go.
All right. Ray is recommending this book, and I'm like, oh, real heroes. Ugh. Like Ray said, it's pretty much like, or like Ollie said, it's like Marvel's Avengers meets Galaxy Quest. That's literally the entire premise.
And the Authority.
I guess to an extent. I don't know. It seems to me like another one of those deconstructionist superhero.
It is.
Of which there are many.
That's all that. Third of those, I guess. Second place to event fatigue is deconstruction nonsense. Really,
I guess you have to forgive creators a little bit because that's their job. Their whole job is deconstructing superheroes and figuring out new ways to treat them. So I guess at some point the idea just becomes meta and says, you know, why don't I take these guys and make them into superheroes and see what happens?
Yeah.
Kind of like isn't that what's that Superman story where Clark Kent ends up in a universe where Clark Kent is, where he is Clark Kent, like reading comics, and then he eventually becomes Superman. Isn't that a book?
There's Secret Identity, Weirdest Kid,
was named Clark Kent.
Yeah, that was by Stuart Immonen, and
right.
Oh, I can't remember who wrote it now. Was it Mark? It wasn't Mark Waid. It was Busick. Busick wrote it. Right. Yeah. With this kid, he was born Clark Kent, and his parents, everybody thought it was cool to get a Clark Superman presence, and he hated it. And then he was a teenager, and then he suddenly spontaneously developed Superman powers. Yeah, that's highly recommended. Anybody who hasn't read Secret Identity should read it.
It's been done in a way successful. This maybe not so much.
But did you like it? I liked it. I gave it a 4, like I said. You're looking forward to issue 2 to see what they do and if they actually give them powers or to just pose as actors or what they can do. Cause that wouldn't really make much sense, but it's interesting. I think Hitch has something here, so I'm going to give it a shot. On the strength of the art alone, you know.
Cool.
I know. I'm going to defer my rating because it's just a first issue.
You don't, right? I agree. You don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, they could develop, they could do something fantastic and mind-blowing with this concept. So,
but for you, how was the interactions between the characters, the dialogue, the setup? You enjoy that?
No, because again, it's very tropey. You got the crack sniffing prostitute wearing out.
That's not tropey. You're basing the characters on actors. So, I mean, do you really call that tropey?
Yeah, it's tropey. Yeah, all of it. You've got the single black guy. He's not like the guy Kevin. The guy created Underworld. He's a rapper. Yeah, he's a rapper. Come on. You know, 20 tropes in this. Washed up actress trying to get back. 20 tropes.
Right? I wouldn't call it tropes. They're playing on the Hollywood
stereotype. Well, they're playing on the Hollywood stereotype.
Right, so, I mean, you know, I excuse it because of that. So.
Man, they're going to do something interesting to keep me.
Well, maybe they will. So, let's hope for that.
So,
I give it a 4. You give it a...
I'll defer until I see another issue.
Okay. Alright, well.
So that concludes our reviews.
Those are our reviews.
Comic book recommendations.
Any recommendations, guys?
Oh yeah, let's go through some recommendations quickly.
Miss Marvel number everything. If you're not reading this book, you should be, period.
You guys are like the weirdest books.
Miss Marvel number 2 continues to be a strong series. I read it, I was like, oh, I was worried this was going to be the first one. Second one is also quite good.
Yeah, the second one, I mean, we're doing, again, something like that's well-established in superhero mythology. You're discovering your powers, figuring out how they work, discovering your motivations, and yet it was interesting and compelling the whole way through. Yeah,
it was for the whole thing. How my powers work, how did I figure this out, and then also what motivates me to be the hero, and all of those things were done. It was great. That's a good one. Miss Marvel number 2.
Can I say
really marginal aside, and Biggin is now my bedroom sweet talk.
And Biggin?
That is too much.
I'm gonna. My recommendation is the Batman and book, which is basically Batman and Brave and the Bold, but back in the days, Batman rotating with a team up book, really. So this last time was Batman and Aquaman. So, yeah, it's always good. Peter Tomasi writes I think his is the best Bat book out right now. Surpassed Snyder, who was, to me, is struggling.
Long shot.
Yeah, I seems so. Right, so Batman and...
Okay. That's my recommendation. I want to recommend 2 X-Men books. The first is Amazing X-Men number 5.
I have to read that.
Jason Aaron writing it and McGinnis on art.
Love me some McGinnis.
Wonderful end to... I was worried about this series, but this is a great conclusion to the first story arc. The return of Nightcrawler, the full formation of this team. It is a more fun kind of joke. It's more comic book superhero than some of the other X-Men books. It feels a bit cute. You have the bamps, but it has a real heart. The ending is sad because... Nightcrawler, true hero that he is, has to make a sacrifice. And overall, this is a good kind of solid 5 issues from Jason Aaron. He's not going to be writing this book much longer, I understand, which is unfortunate. Because I think when he was doing Wolverine and the X-Men, he tended to go towards the wackiness a bit too much, which could be off-putting. This one, he balances the wacky with the full superhero... the stronger parts of it, getting the characterization right, and doing it on a big scale. The Ed McGuinness art is a plus. Overall, all new X-Men number 5. And then the other one is
all new X Factor Peter David number 5 continues to be a strong first arc for them as well. Peter David writes these characters really well because nobody else is writing these characters, and he takes B-list X-Men characters and raises them up. His story writing skills are great. Glad that the stroke didn't throw him off his game. So all new...
Who had a stroke?
Peter David had a stroke last year. All new X-Factor number 5 and all an Amazing X-Men number 5. Both of them are really strong this week, and we should go get them for sure.
Yeah, I can definitely second Khalil's recommendation on the two X-books. I actually had Amazing X-Men number 5 as a recommendation. My other recommendation then would be Red Lanterns number 29.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I dropped that book.
So hard.
Why?
So hard.
No, seriously, why did you recommend it? That's good.
It's largely the whole continued evolution of Kara Zor-El. This is the issue where she comes. She's wearing the Red Ring now, and she's wearing the Red Lanterns. She's still very much angry, but it's kind of like trying to develop the anger instead of just being like wild baseless anger like she had before in her own book. And this is where she also comes face to face with her cousin. They have some words and some blows to an extent. I am still thrown by Guy Gardner's porn stash. That's kind of weird.
It is awful.
Still. But
it is awful.
I actually did like it because you're seeing a bit more development of Kara as a character in Red Lanterns, in this Red Daughter of Krypton story arc, and you're seeing her own book.
I haven't read it, but I like the concept. I like the concept of making her unique.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that'll pull away from just being another super thing.
Yeah. And, I mean, in this book, she's actually terrorizing people. I mean, Guy Gardner, who's being a lantern, whether red or green or whatever, he's actually scared. It's like a Kryptonian with a red ring. That is, you know, we're
yeah, watch out for that one punch.
Yeah. So it is an interesting book, and you are, I'm seeing
is
a bit more.
Is she spitting acid?
Yes, you've seen her spitting the red lava thing. You've seen her using her Kryptonian powers, punching, smashing, heat vision, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my recommendation for this week.
We also have a recommendation from Ramiro Paul Arsongay. He recommends Rogue Rebellion, Forever Evil number 6. It wraps up that mini, and his thesis is pretty good. I haven't been reading it myself, so.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I actually was reading it. It's actually not bad, but it's kind of tame the whole Forever Evil nonsense. So.
Okay, yeah, that's why. Alright, so that's been our show for today, guys. Thanks for tuning in. As usual, we want you to send your, well, brand new, send your recorded, you can just drop us a recorded line, a question you have for us, yeah? We read it on air. We listen to it on air and answer it as well. As usual, you can check us out at the Outsiders Comic Book Underground on Facebook. And you can see this podcast at, and somebody else still, because I never remember where our...
Our blog is outsiderscomicbook.blogspot.com.
There you go.
You can also find us on iTunes.
That's right.
You can tweet us at outsiderscomic on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And, a lot of ways. Leave reviews on iTunes if you like this show. Leave a note on the blog.
Yeah, any ladies listening, drop your number as well for Gibson. He needs it. So, that's our show.
Go do your burpees.
I'll see you next time, girl.